Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Presque Présent. I'm your co-host Kelly and I'm joined by our other co-host Dilara.
Bonjour tout le monde! Welcome back. So today we're recording at Carrousel du Louvre, which is a little park right in the gardens of Musée du Louvre. It's on the first arrondissement and we've already done a recording here, the staying one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's our first recording after the winter season outdoors. We're so excited. The weather is nice.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice to be back outside. Today we are going to talk about something that might be a little bit random, but something that's very Parisian and speaks to the character of the city. It's Parisian street furniture. Like, honestly, it is a thing, so please hear me out.
Yeah, because Katie, when you first talked about doing this episode, I had no idea what you meant by that. And then like we started talking about it and I learned that it's actually a concept, which is mobilier de rue or mobilier urbain in French. But yes, please elaborate what this means to our listeners.
By street furniture, I'm talking about like the press kiosks that you see here, the water fountains, you know, those tall green columns mm-hmm. that have posters in them, the things that you might notice but don't really pay too much attention to, the details on the street that, like, when you take photos of them for their like Parisian charm, mm-hmm. You don't really know anything about them. This episode, we're going to talk about them, and fair warning, there's quite a lot of history in this episode.
Surprise, surprise. So where do you want to start?
So let's start at the columns. The origins are not in Paris, but it's actually in Berlin.
Okay.
So in the mid-19th century, in the German capital, had like a bit of a problem with fly posting, and it decided that these posters made the city look really messy and dirty, and so a guy called Ernst Litfaß, he designed like this cylindrical column which allowed like posters to be put up, but also like allowing the authorities to ban fly posting anywhere else.
Okay.
At that time, Paris kind of had the same problem.
I imagine.
Yeah, so there was like posters for theatres and shows. They were everywhere on like walls and trees and something called pissoir, which I will come back to later. The poster designer, Gabriel Maurice, created a French version of these columns in 1868.
Okay.
And they became so successful that they became known as Morris columns. So in the next 20 years or so, there was like 450 columns in the city.
Wow.
So shows and dance halls, they were so popular that the posters advertising them were like super colourful works of art in their own right. And they were like created by some artists like Toulouse-Lautrec.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm.
So this became like a really early form of street art. Hmm. And one of the source articles said that these street art like translated the city into text.
Okay, I don't know much about Germany, honestly, but when I looked into these advertisement columns that you're talking about, or pillars, I got the impression that they're being taken for granted in Germany. Mm. In cities like Hamburg, Berlin, apparently they're slowly disappearing. Mm. Whereas in Paris, they're embraced, even like you said, as a form of art. I feel like anything French is almost preserved as a heritage here. Mm. It's interesting to see how different cultures conserve and treat their heritage, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, that's true. So, like, the cylinders themselves are made from, like, green cast iron and they've got kind of dome on the top. Some of the older Morris versions are decorated with, like, six lion heads on them and they have the words, like, theatre or spectacular just engraved on them at the top. Mm-hmm. Some designs are inspired by the Neo-Renaissance, which was popular during the reign of Napoleon III. They're also engraved with the Paris City Medallion, which I have never noticed before or ever heard of. So the Paris Medallion shows a ship floating on a stormy sea, and the motto in Latin, bear with me, is Fluctuat nec mergitur.
What does it mean?
Well, I nailed the Latin at the first.
Bravo for saying that. I don't think I can pronounce that.
And it means it is beaten by the waves but never sinks.
Yeah. Nice.
So while I was waiting on you to come and do this recording, I was just standing at the metro entrance and I spotted this on one of the lampposts just at the metro. So I have a photograph of it. I was
amazing.
Like, no way, that's that Latin thing that I can't pronounce. So I have a photo of it. I'll post it.
Amazing. Yes, please post it on Instagram. Yeah.
This motto I'm talking about dates back hundreds of years. Like, it was officially introduced in 1358. And it was used as the motto of the River Seine's Boatman's Corporation.
Okay.
Some historians say it's like much older than that and probably goes all the way back to Roman times.
Wow, okay. And do we know like what's inside these columns?
I love this question because there were so many stories like surrounding that very thing, right? There's been myths about spiral staircases leading down to the catacombs or to like a literal underworld where, like, depending on the era in Paris, it would be a refuge or an escape for spies or criminals or like even resistance fighters. But unfortunately, if the columns did actually open, it was just to store street cleaning equipment. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. It's so disappointing. So, it, like, there's no romance, there's no secret tunnels, there's no spies. It's such a shame.
It's as if IKEA did it.
Yeah.
Okay, Kelly, let's move on to another piece of street furniture. What else we got?
So let's move on to the green drinking fountains. So this story starts way back during the Siege of Paris in 1871. Mm-hmm. The Prussian army had occupied the capital in order to starve the city to surrender. So this was after the Germans had defeated Napoleon at the Battle of Sedan during the Franco-Prussian War. I'll put a link in the show notes to that.
Okay, but can you please get to the point? Like, what does this war stuff has to do with drinking fountains?
I'm getting there. I told you there would be history and context. Okay, so 1871, the water supply had been destroyed and the price of clean drinking water had like increased, or clean drinking water just wasn't available at all. So it's said that the population actually drank wine, and most of them were just drunk during this whole siege, because wine was actually more accessible.
So, but it is almost the same still, yes. Not today. A bottle of water costs more than a bottle of wine sometimes.
Yeah. Exactly. It was also around this time that the Paris Commune was created. That's a socialist revolutionary government, which deserves its own episode later. So enter our main player, and this is a guy called Sir Richard Wallace. He's a super rich British guy and a Francophile. He donated 2.5 million francs, which is about 8 million euro
wow.
in today's money, just to the poor of Paris, and they absolutely loved him for it.
Of course.
Yep. He himself, it was him that funded the project of setting up these green drinking fountains to like provide clean water to the city. Like, what a guy. Like, you know, and these water fountains ended up being called Wallace fountains after him.
Oh wow, so like the Paris literally owes its fountains to this British guy.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So even though they were commissioned to solve a practical problem, Wallace got some help with the design because he wanted them to be like beautiful works of art in their
of
own
course.
Right. And you know, they really are.
Yeah.
Like, they're painted that Paris green colour and they're forged in like cast iron, and they're actually four different versions that he created. So the most beautiful and ornate is like an octagonal pedestal. And it's got four women like holding mm-hmm. up their arms and supporting the dome. The dome is decorated with like dolphins and fleur-de-lis, and the four women represent four different virtues and the four seasons.
Oh, what are they?
So there's simplicity and spring, and this woman has her eyes closed.
Okay.
There's charity and summer, and she has her eyes open. Mm. There's sobriety, autumn, and she also has her eyes closed.
Okay.
And there's kindness and winter, and she has her eyes open.
Okay.
But the way their dresses fall moves differently as well. You can tell each woman apart.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really pretty. So I'll put a link to an article and you'll see more examples of the version I've talked about and other fountains. There's also a map to where you can find them, so if you fancy a treasure hunt then you can use that to find these beautiful things. The details are amazing, and like, it blows my mind that these beautiful things are just in the street just to be used every day.
I know, right? And I think like that map you're talking about includes the sparkling water fountains as well.
Yeah.
I never came across them, but I think it's amazing that there's even like a sparkling option.
Yeah.
Like, it's super luxurious, you know?
Okay,
anyway, so let's move on to another mobilier urbain.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about the kiosks.
Okay.
Well, it's not really street furniture actually, but they do match with this green dark metal decor that you're talking about. Mm. And do you know why?
Why?
It's because of Osman. We keep coming back to this architect.
Yes, we do.
He's responsible for that green, deep green color that decorates all the street furniture.
Mm-hmm.
It was his idea. Like the Morris columns, these green kiosks are all over the city and have existed for about like 150 years.
Okay.
Since Osman started the gentrification of Paris in 1857.
Right.
So now, actually, the Osman kiosks are all gone, and all the ones that still exist are the replicas dating all the way back to the 80s.
The 80s?
Yeah,
really?
The 80s, yeah. Although, like, they did this again in the 80s, the replicas were quite uncomfortable for the people who run these kiosks, so they had to upgrade them again in 2018.
Okay.
These kiosks originally sold newspapers, but now in an attempt to keep them alive, they've been selling like souvenirs, like trinkets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There are probably over 300 of them in the city now. And the job of a kioskier, which is the person who runs the kiosk, is a little unconventional and very demanding for very little reward. Mm-hmm. And they're held in high regard by their loyal customers. So it involves crazy schedules, as they need to be on site early for deliveries, and they also have to work and stand up for long hours.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a bit tiring.
Yep.
So I found a source article, and it said like they're about they can rent their kiosk for about 120 euros per month, mm-hmm. which is really not that expensive.
Not really.
And if they do that, they keep 21% on gross sales of each magazine and newspaper, which isn't that much money. So there's an article I found, which I will put in the show notes, that says that the most important thing about these news kiosks is that they have to supply news from every political standpoint, even during election times.
Yeah.
It is so important in these times of living in an internet echo chamber
yes.
where all our algorithms that send us the news that we want to hear,
yeah. mm-hmm.
to have access and visibility to all these options and to know what actually exists outside of our social media feeds.
Yeah.
It's kind of important, you know?
Yep.
And I really didn't know about this law, but the minute I read about it, it made sense to me, because sometimes when I'm like really disconnected from social media, I just go in front of a kiosk and learn and just like look at the headlines and sort of learn about what's going on in the world in a nutshell. I mean, it's very like shallow, but there's this happening, that happening,
yeah.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this article also has some really cool vintage photos of these kiosks, so please have a look. And if you're in Paris, go buy some printed media from these kiosks.
So yeah, I love these kiosks too. Yep. And you know, it doesn't really sound like a great job to be a kioskier. Early hours, low pay. But what I want to know is if you're like cooped up in a small kiosk all day, like where do you pee?
Oh my God, I know why you're thinking about this. It's been a while we recorded outside. And in this park where we are, there is no toilet. Like whenever Kaylee and I want to have a picnic, I immediately check if there's a public bathroom
yes.
in the park.
Yes.
So
it gives me so much anxiety, and I'm just like, okay, I'll come out and sit in a park, but I need to know that there's a toilet available.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just like here, right? I just quickly want to discuss this cliche that like Paris smells of pee.
Oh yeah, you mentioned the pissoir at the top of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to linger on it too much because it's gross, right? But true or false, does Paris smell of pee?
Some places yes, some places no. It's really difficult to give a straight up answer to this. But I feel like yeah, at some places people just like, especially men, don't
yeah.
pay attention to this and they just pee wherever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the hot weather's coming in, etc. So
yeah,
let's leave that there. But it's, you know, this problem's not just, it's just not a today problem actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like public urination has been a problem since like the 1800s in the
okay.
city. So public urinals, or these pissoirs, like you say, I mentioned them already, became part of the Parisian street furniture, and there is like, I think there's one left on Boulevard Arago in the 13th.
Okay.
I used to walk past it like all the time during the pandemic when I'd go on my walks, and I always wondered what it was, and now I know. So
it was a pissoir?
It was the last pissoir in Paris.
Okay,
yeah.
So for listeners who don't know, maybe I just want to explain. Pissoir is like a urinal that is like outdoors where you can actually see the people, men obviously, peeing from outside, whereas like there are public toilets that exist in Paris as well on the street, which is like a private space. You go into a locked room and like people don't actually see you doing whatever you're doing. So I'm all for like the public closed bathrooms where you have access to, but yeah, I'm glad those pissoirs don't exist. And yeah, I don't want to see it as a part of like the Parisian street furniture.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. you know you're absolutely right. Obviously the enclosure is better, but for the sake of argument, I would still rather there was like something sanitary in the street than just using the corner of a building, because it might reduce the smell a little bit. So I think there's a bit of an argument for both.
Yeah, you're right.
But let's leave this
conversation now. Okay, because like I really want to come to the favorite part like of this episode for me.
Okay, go on.
Which is the bookiest of Paris. So I guess everybody knows about these like green boxes that run along the Quai de la Seine with sellers of secondhand books. When actually you're learning French, they say the word livre is the word for a book. But in a day-to-day language, people don't really use this word. They say bouquin, which means book. So that's where this like bouquinist come from. These book stands, or maybe I should say boxes, there's a crowd of like tourists passing by.
Yeah, the shooters.
Yeah. It's like a convoy. Okay. I think we're on someone's TikTok now.
Was that us she was filming?
Yeah, she was filming us. Yeah. Well, tag us on Instagram.
Presque Present Podcast.
Anyway, what was I saying? So these book stands, or maybe I should say boxes, are situated for 3 kilometers between the Quai de l'Ouvre de Pont-Marie, which is the right bank, and Quai Voltaire, to Quai de la Touronne, which is the left bank. And these booksellers display secondhand and antique books, as well as like old magazines, stamps, souvenirs, magnets, posters, postcards, like everything antique can be found in this open green boxes. Looks like there are about 900 boxes alongside La Seine, run by 240 bookinists.
900? Really? That many? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to share a bit of history for us?
Of course, just for you, Kelly. So the practice goes back all the way to the 16th century. And in 1557, during the War of Religion, these book peddlers were seen as like spreading illegal Protestant propaganda. And in the 17th century, open-air book readings were very popular. And when Pont Neuf, which means the new bridge, the first bridge, opened up, they carried their books on the wheelbarrows and hung them on the quay walls with leather straps.
Right, okay.
So that was the first tradition. And business boomed during the French Revolution, as everyone knows a little bit of like French history.
Yeah.
Would know that this revolution was about destroying monarchy, demolishing religion, eating the rich and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So all those precious books that were held in churches and the chateaus were now available in the stalls, because like they emptied out the pockets and the stocks of the rich.
Yeah, so they just pillaged all of these like antique books and sold them on the quay. That's really cool.
Exactly. And right after the revolution in 1891, booksellers were authorized to permanently stay on the quay.
Excellent.
Today, just like the kiosks, they're actually under threat because of a few things. The internet, technology, fewer people are reading printed books, but also because the lower quays have been opened up to pedestrians now, so there's less footfall on the upper quays.
Okay.
They are noisier with traffic and dirtier and a bit less pleasant to walk on.
Can I just interject here and say, can you imagine what those upper quays must have been like before they opened those lower quays? Can you imagine how cramped walking on those would have been before you had more space?
Yeah, Well, I can, because they were not open to pedestrians before when I first arrived.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Still cars on the quay.
Yeah,
when you
got
here.
Exactly.
Right, got
exactly.
You. Okay.
I think it's also worth mentioning that these bookinists are actually World UNESCO Heritage Sites. But despite that, during the preparations for the Olympic Games, it was proposed that these stalls should be temporarily moved to create space for spectators and the crowds. However, thankfully, on 13th of February this year, it was decided that they would stay. Macron decided that closing or moving these stalls would cause the bookinists too much financial hardship, obviously.
You know, obviously, even though it's like the right decision, financial hardship is like one reason. but to even like to uproot literally hundreds of years of history for some elitist and expensive event, like I can't even believe they were considering it in the first place.
I know, all these things they're considering for the Olympics, nothing makes sense at the beginning and then they change their minds, like it's just... Anyway, Paris is not ready for the Olympics. That's like...
Yes. Don't come, we're not ready.
Okay, yeah. Kelly, anything else?
Okay, so yeah, there are other types of green street furniture, like including like lampposts and benches and the chairs in the parks and stuff, that, believe me or not, right, they do have some kind of story behind them, but I'm not going to bang on about lampposts and benches, mm-hmm. right, but if you are curious and you kind of want to have a look at this, like it made me quite curious,
yeah.
I will put links to some stories and the history of that sort of part of it.
Nice.
But I will also just sum up by saying this, right, let's think about taking photos in Paris. You're on Alexander the Third Bridge, and it's one of the most beautiful bridges in the city.
I love that bridge. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
You will include like the streetlights on that photo, yeah. because of how ornate they are. They are part of that beauty, along with like the golden statues, along mm-hmm. with the stonework. There are a lot of places in the city where the street is like not famous, but there might be like a drinking fountain or some benches there, or maybe like a scooter or a bike or something just parked next to some trees. And if you take that photo, you will know that that photo has been taken in Paris, because those details are ubiquitous and they're part of the city's identity.
Ah, oh, this is so true, actually. Like when you just mentioned the trees, for me, like aside from all the street furniture that we just mentioned, the trees and their roots, like I don't know if you've ever noticed, the street trees, their roots are always covered in this like circular bars on the ground. I don't know how to explain that. Maybe like I'll take a photo and post on our like yes. Instagram. But whenever like I saw black and white photo, I always thought about like checking if the tree roots had those on them to guess if the photo was from Paris.
Yeah.
And it always works. Yeah. Like these street furniture being a part of Paris city identity is so true, and that's how you understand like this is Paris, yeah. even though it was taken like 50-60 years ago.
Yeah. So Delara, do we have a quote today?
As usual, we do.
We've got a quote about street furniture. Unbelievable.
It's from Alexandre Jardin, who's a French writer, and it's a very recent quote, actually. He said, "The Seine, our main river, flows in between rows of books. To think the bouquinists are just booksellers is to understand nothing. They speak to the very identity of Paris and its profound ties to literature. Paris is a city born from the dreams of writers."
That's really nice. It's true, and I think like he wrote that as part of the campaign to not have the bouquinists move during the Olympics, right?
Exactly, exactly. Lots of like intellectuals came together to protest against this, and they signed a petition, and this is like when he wrote that in his column.
Yeah, that's great. And they won.
Yes, they did. This is how we win everything in France, by protesting. If you want to know more, go back to our protest episode.
Yes. So that's it. That's our totally random street furniture episode.
I love it.
Yep. And I just want to just have a quick special mention to a website called frenchmoments.eu, the main source for most of the information I gave today.
Okay, nice.
So please go check it out. It goes into a lot of detail about Paris and stuff. It's a lovely website. Have a look at it.
Amazing. Thank you everyone for listening. We're going to try to release our next episode in 2 weeks' time. However, we're not sure, but like my vacations and a lot of things happening yeah. at the moment. But we're going to do our best. Thank you for listening. And please, please, please continue reviewing us, giving us a rating.
Yeah. Thanks everyone. We appreciate you. Ciao.
Au revoir.